This is the Radio Today programme, your weekly look at what's going on in the radio industry. Hello, my name's Stuart Clarkson. Coming up on this episode, we'll preview this year's Radio Festival with Festival Director Nick Pitts. We'll talk all things radio journalism with the CEO of the Broadcast Journalism Training Council, John Goodell. This week, James Cridland considers the importance of habit in radio. And in David Lloyd's Radio Moments, Johnny Walker and Mike Smith leave Radio 1. Rock Radio arrives in Manchester and Capital tries something different for the FM-AM split. Radio
Today. The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, working with the world's leading broadcasters and equipment suppliers to transform industry standard technologies and workflows.
First, Radio Today's editor and founder Roy Martin is here. It's a bank holiday week, so traditionally it's quite quiet in radio, isn't it?
Indeed. Hi, Stu. 4-day week. I think this is the calm before the storm that is next week, because next week, of course, is
Radio Audio Week. Yay!
And we'll all be in London, and we'll be doing Rajar, and we'll go to the podcast awards and all stuff like that, and the young Arias as well. So quite a busy week next week. So I think we can just take this opportunity to chill.
Oh, excellent. And we can talk about really geeky technical stuff, because that's the only news around that there is, really. So let's start with this one from Ofcom. They're going to advertise some more DAB multiplexes. Whoop.
Yeah, they said there was a few more to come, and everybody was expecting Cumbria would get one. But bully for Cumbria, because they're getting two. They've announced plans to advertise one for Morecambe Bay, which, of course, spreads into South Cumbria, and one designed to cover the north and west of Cumbria and southwest Scotland, which is pretty much what the Bay was, our heart, North Lancashire, South Cumbria. So Barrow, Kendal, Windermere, Lancaster, Morecambe itself, and then the north of Cumbria, which is where the north and south is, the two population areas, of course, and the west. So Workington, Carlisle, and then up to Gretna as well. So the north and south will be pretty much covered, and then the few sheep in the middle, they'll have to continue without local DAB.
Yeah, I was in that area not so long ago myself, actually, driving back from central Scotland back down to Yorkshire. And yeah, there's huge swathes on my DAB radio where it wasn't really picking up anything. It was even struggling with the BBC National Multiplex at one point, and I had to go onto good old FM. So yeah, there are areas in the Scottish borders where you can't get shit.
You can get shit if you want. Just go to any one of the fields. There's plenty. But yeah, I know what you mean. So that'll be good for the digital stations. What's interesting is who will apply, of course. Muxco, probably guaranteed to go in there. I've noticed there's a Muxco Cumbria Limited on Companies House registered last month. So they're expecting it, because Global own the South in terms of commercial radio, and Bauer owns the North in terms of commercial radio. So maybe we'll see one going to each, or maybe they'll mix up together. Who knows?
Good for BBC Radio Cumbria to get on DAB as well, but presume it'll be guaranteed a space.
Well, they'll have to go on both, won't they, I guess. So double the outcome for them.
Excellent. So it's a weird frequency swap going on in London that Ofcom have said, yes, this is all right too. This is Panjab and Love Sport swapping medium wave frequencies.
Yeah, so the result of this is that Panjab will get a bigger audience. They'll get to cover the whole of London on 558. And Love Sport will just cover a little bit of London on 1584. So the winners here are Panjab Radio, but the people who owned the frequency was it's Kelvin, isn't it, and Love Sport.
Yeah.
So either he's thinking, well, I've got this little station here and I'm paying for a big transmitter, and I don't like that situation, but you'd think he'd just give the transmitter back or sell the license rather than do this complicated route of swap the formats around with Ofcom. We don't know if there's money changing hands. We don't know what the future plans are for both stations. Well, Panjab presumably will carry on with their bigger transmitter, but we don't know what Love Sport's going to do, because they're on DAB as well, aren't they, I think?
Yeah, Love Sport's on the London 3 multiplex, but Panjab's on the national, on the SDL national multiplex as well, isn't it? So, yeah, do we need these AM frequencies still?
Well, they must think that their potential listeners are listening to AM, so it's good for sport fans and good for people who like the output from Panjab. Who knows?
Fixed Radio is a station that is on DAB in London as well, of course, as well as in Manchester. And Ugly Phil is their latest signing to do the breakfast show.
Yeah, this is a strange one. Apparently, the rumours were he was going to be on one of his old stations, like X or, I don't know, Kiss or something like that. But no, he's joining I don't want to be disrespectful to the station or anything, but they're on a tiny dab station. So who knows where that's going? But welcome back to the UK, Phil. Ugly Phil. I think he's all right, actually. He's not that ugly.
he's got no hair and he's got glasses. So I'm saying that's a gorgeous look, if you ask me. He's going to be doing the breakfast show on Manchester and London. I think they've got different breakfast shows at the moment, haven't they? Manchester's got a separate one to London, so they're going to put the same one out on both. But it's
he's going to do Manchester as well. I thought this was just London.
Both. And that all starts from the 10th of June. Obviously, he's back from Australia, where he's been on Triple M. I think it's not the first time he's left Triple M for a move to the UK either. So interesting times. You were in London last week, some Jack Radio event. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. Jack Radio, yeah. So they've started a spiritualist show during the daytime between 11 and 1. Now, normally, this kind of show where you ring up, the person tells you whether you're going to be rich or whether you're going to die soon, that's normally on at 10 o'clock at night. But this is going to be a daily show every weekday, 11 to 1 on Jack. It started this week with one spiritualist counsellor and one clairvoyant medium, and they're both taking it in turns to come on and tell people their fortune and if they've got any connections from the other side. And I've been listening to the first one, which was on Tuesday this week, and it's basically your old phone in a medium and get a reading. It doesn't happen on radio on a daily basis anywhere else, so it should be interesting.
Is there anybody out there? That's what they're asking listeners on STL. Yeah,
they'll have to wait for radio, won't they?
The Mental Health Minute is coming back. Really good initiative that ran on many, many radio stations, several hundred across the country last year. It's happening again, 10:59, just before 11 a.m. on Monday this week. And lots of stations up and down the country have been getting involved with that. And the Community Radio Awards are back for their fourth year. They've just opened for entries. It's free to enter for the Station of the Year category this year. And the deadline for that is the 16th of June. So you've got just over a month to get your award entries in.
And it's good for community radio stations to take part because it's only a fiver to enter.
Is that all it is? Okay.
Yeah, it's not a big money-making scheme like some of them. But I'd encourage everybody to get involved in that because it's a good one.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa. Well, lots of events coming up over the next few weeks, not least next week. It's Radio Audio Week, and the Radio Festival kicks it off on Monday. Of course, Roy will be there.
I'll be there. You'll be there.
Yes, and hopefully there as well, because he's the festival director, will be Nick Pitts. Hi, Nick.
Hey, how you doing, Stu? You all right? Hello, Roy.
Yeah, not too bad. So we're getting excited about the festival now. What's the theme this year?
Well, the theme this year is all about the new age of audio. We, as I keep explaining to people, is that no sooner had we said Happy New Year to our colleagues, which, as we all know, we continue doing right until the end of January, and you never know when quite you should stop doing it. But even by that point, loads had changed in our wonderful world in which we work in audio. And it just continued, it continued, it continued. At that point, we just went, look, there is a new age of audio happening right in front of us as we speak. And we believe that this is what our theme should be this year. The great thing is it's being led from a talent point of view. For a long time now, it's been about the technology and the creativity of radio works into the technology. But right now, it's absolutely flipped itself on its head. And it's about the talent from the production to the people fronting, to the management behind, et cetera, to the ideas. It's absolutely ideas driven at the moment.
Talking of the talent, you've got some of the big names who've started new shows this year going to be there. So people like Zoe Ball and Simon Mayo.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, the first thing, I always, because this is my second year of doing it, and last year I always said we just set ourselves at a ridiculous height and then we come back, and wherever we come back to, we'll still be above where we were originally have started. So I was sort of like, right, we've got to get all of them in and we've got to get them all interviewing each other, which of course you know isn't going to happen, but what it means is it just focuses the mind a bit and you talk to the right people. So yeah, we've managed to pull off a few great coups in there, including, as you say, Simon, who left the BBC with, you know, millions of people listening every day, and he's joined a startup digital station. I mean, what is the story there? Obviously, there's the whole background to the Radio 2 departure, but that's not what this is about. It's about the future. It's about the new age, and we want to find out what his thought processes were behind that. Zoe, of course, first female Radio 2 breakfast presenter, And it's a programme that has absolutely gone to the heart of the public pretty much from day one, which in itself is an achievement. And it sounds like she's been there forever. So that's a really exciting thing as well. We've also managed to pull off Greg James into the mix as well. And we've got a really exciting session on that front, which is, I sat there and I went, well, Greg is one of those broadcasters who's very different, who's sort of recreated or reinvented the role of the host, because it's about the listener. It's not about him. And there's a lot of talk about broadcasts. It's always about the listener. But when you boil it down, it's not. It's about them. But Greg absolutely gets it. He's created this new sort of social radio. And I thought, what would be great for all the people in that room, regardless of which side of the fence they come from, whether they're podcasters, whether they're executives, whether they're producers of radio, whether they're the presenters. The one thing you want to know is, how did they make that program this morning? What did they do to get to that position? So we've got Greg and some of his production team on stage, hopefully, talking about some of the ideas from this morning and the processes they went through to get what we heard out of the radio. And what I'm quite looking forward to, as we know, having all been there ourselves, is that, you know, Greg will probably go, oh, it was easy. We just did this and this is what happened. And someone will go, no, it wasn't as simple as that. We went through all these hoops and it'll be really interesting to hear how those bits and pieces came together.
Cool. And quite a bit on strategy as well. You've got the minister there, Margot James, and also James Pennell, the kind of big boss of radio at the BBC.
Yeah, I mean, we booked him before he did his announcement on the controller side of network radio and what have you. But he's going to come in. Something I wanted to do for a while is, you know, BBC Sounds came on with much fanfare. Some of it has been successful. Some of it, you know, you get a lot of kind of, I can't find this, I can't find that, why is that not working? That's only on BBC Sounds. And I thought it'd be really good to sort of do a six-month report card on how it's going. So we asked James if he wanted to do that, and he said yes. And, you know, we work very closely with DR UK every year with regards to the radio festival. And we spoke to Ford Ennals there, and he said, well, look, I might be able to get Margot to come along, and she's absolutely up for coming and telling everyone about the digital future of our world.
Big names on the stage this year then for special guests. Who's hosting?
This is an interesting one. We wanted to do something a bit different, and we went through quite a lot of decision-making. I mean, you know, when I said we start up high, and I don't mean this with any disrespect, but we came up with the most ridiculous idea, was we'll see if we can get Alan Partridge to do it, or to do some of it at least. Luckily, we decided, actually, no, let's not. But what we've ended up with is with Anna and Tony from 5 Live Drive. The reason we've done this as being quite new is I don't think in the new era of the radio festival since it's been at the library, I mean, I've been to all of them and I can't recall this happening, is it's not been double-headed as a host. And the both of them are, when you listen to them on air, you forget that what they're doing is they're doing a scripted newscast with ad hoc bits between. They make it sound so natural, and I'm hoping they'll bring that naturalness to the stage and host our day for us.
In terms of the kind of future of radio and the future of audio, we're talking about this direction that we're heading, then there's quite a few sessions that are centred around podcasts and people who have been involved in the podcast scene.
Well, it's really important, isn't it? I mean, we work in a world of audio, and one thing we're saying, everyone is saying in our industry at the moment with all the change and the churn that's going on, is just because a radio station, one way of getting your audio out, may not be there, it doesn't mean you should stop. It doesn't mean you should turn your back on it. It is the greatest industry in the world, and I don't think any other industry celebrates what it does the way that the radio and audio industry does. So it's absolutely the right thing to do to include podcasts in there. So we've got these short shelf life podcasts, what some people might disparagingly call chip paper podcasts. They've all of a sudden exploded, thanks to Brexit mainly, in that they'll do them in the morning and they're dead by the evening. And they're not those ones that sit in there in your playlist and you spend a long, long time going through. And these have sort of exploded, and we want to find out more. And what happens after Brexit? You know, once that's, I mean, it's not going to go very quickly, but once that's moved aside, how are these going to continue? So that's an interesting one. We're also looking at the fact that a lot of podcasts these days don't just stick to making the podcast. They go on tour. We've seen the launch of a podcast live, etc. So we thought we'd get some people to come and tell everyone and explain how this works and give some ideas on, if you do a podcast, what's the next thing? Last year when I was doing the festival, I really wanted to focus on a specific point of what the theme was and then replicate it through the day in different ways. And we did the future of voice last year. And we got different people to come in from different areas of the industry to talk about how voice activation affects them. And this year, what I decided to do was a series of sessions throughout the day called The New Age of Digital Audio, According To. So what it does is it's sort of just super focusing on that area of the digital side. And by that, I mean, we've got Ruth Fitzsimmons coming in to talk about the podcast market. And we've got Brenda Salinas-Baker, who's coming in from Google to talk about the voice activation and the future of that whole area of digital delivery of audio on those platforms. And we're talking with another couple of people as well, still at this stage, to try and get another one of those sessions in.
I don't know about you, Nick. I think that the word radio is getting a bad deal here. It seems to be been downgraded quite a lot. Do you think it's going to come full circle and we're going to get rid of this new audio word and go back to good old radio events rather than radio audio events?
I think, actually, in our world, the two are working closer than they've ever worked before. I think there's a natural equilibrium coming through here whereby the pomposity of the two sides trying to fight against each other has sort of fallen by the wayside. You know, it's really clear now how much of the population through research listen to podcasts, that streaming platforms such as Mixcloud, etc., rely on spoken word content as much as they do music. You've got Spotify, who've invested in purchasing a rather large production company that make podcasts. I think the world of audio is where it's going. We all love radio because we love the romance behind it. We're all old, the three of us. We were all around when... All right, Roy and I are old. Sorry, I am old. And I fell in love with this I fell in love with this romance of a man in a studio talking to me and playing me some fantastic records. And I think it is beyond that. There's a lot of, as we know, and I listen to you guys each week, and you know, you're doing the right thing when it comes to talking about what's going on in the radio industry right now. You know, it's the death of local radio. Well, local radio was created when there was no such thing as anything to listen to audio-wise apart from your records, quarter-inch, 8-track cartridges, and 4 networks from the BBC. And independent local radio was created for that. Now there is so much more, it has to reinvent itself. And to reinvent itself, it needs to not only make itself different, but it needs to cuddle up and be inclusive with those other areas. So we are in an audio industry, as far as I'm concerned.
It's okay, Roy. He's a regular listener. He can call us old as much as he likes, as long as he keeps listening every week.
I've just checked, and the domain audiotoday.co.uk is available, so I should go ahead and register that, shouldn't I?
And I expect to get my residuals from putting that idea in your head.
Ah, fantastic. We must mention as well, Frank Skinner's at the festival next week as well, and another big names there. And I think you can still get a ticket, £129 for members, £199 for non-members of the Radio Academy. All the details at radioacademy.org.
Can I just say, with the Frank one, by the way, as well, you're getting two for the price of one here with Frank, because he's being interviewed by Matt Ford. So you've got two comedians on stage, and it's going to be, I mean, you know, I can tell you that's going to close the morning. So, you know, we're programming this to make sure that through the day there are plenty of points when you will go, I've got to hang around for this. But Frank, I'm really looking forward to seeing, as with everyone, and I look forward most of all to seeing you guys.
And can I just say as well, you mentioned the price there. I saw somebody complain about the price the other day, and I thought, actually, I remember the days when it was £600, £700, £800 for a ticket just to go to it was 3 or 4 days, but for 100 or 200 quid for what you're getting, it's not bad. I support that price bracket, so well done for that.
Well, thank you. And I've sort of, in a couple of my posts on social media, I've sort of tried to address that, because it is a lot of money, but if you just think about what you're getting for that, you know, where else could you see Zoe Ball, Simon Mayo, Greg James, Frank Skinner, all on the stage for what is going to probably be around 70 or 80 minutes of their time in total? Where else are you going to be able to get that and the experience and the stories and be in a room, in an intimate room with names like that for that sort of money? You're not going to be able to do it ever for any sort of money apart from at that. So if that's something that fires you up, you know, that's a really good opportunity.
Yeah, we're there, definitely. Website address again, radioacademy.org. We'll see you next week, Nick.
See you then. Look after yourselves.
Thank you, Nick. Also happening next week, tuning in. We'll be at that on Tuesday morning. It's the Young Arias, the British Podcast Awards, towards the end of the week, and much more as well, of part of Radio Audio Week. You get all the details at radioaudioweek.co.uk. Another date for your diary, Radio Days Europe's Podcast Day is the 13th of June in London. Tickets for that available. It's all getting busy now. We'll see you next week then, Roy, in London.
Yeah, and we've also got the Kids Sports Day at school next week as well.
Which, oh, really?
I don't think you're coming to. But
that's not in my diary, no.
I'll show up, yeah. It's going to be a busy week.
Are you doing the dad's race?
Yeah, dad and daughter.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionics Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionics Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Next on the Radio Today programme, we're going to talk radio journalism. The Broadcast Journalism Training Council just recently celebrated its 40th birthday. I'm delighted to say we can welcome to the podcast the CEO of the BJTC, John Goodell. Welcome, John.
Thank you so much. Hello.
And many people will know you as well from your long days at Chiltern and IRN. So this is what you're up to these days. You're running the BJTC.
Yeah, IRN was such a long time ago. What was it, 10 years ago that I was last editor at IRN? But yes, for the past 5 years, I've been running the Broadcast Journalism Training Council, which is a company that's owned by the primary broadcasters of the UK. So the BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Sky News, ITN, Global, Reuters, AP, they all are involved in the company that's been running for 40 years. As you say, it's our 40th anniversary this year. And really, our role is to ensure the standards of journalism are maintained through the teaching of journalism skills. So when a student in higher education and elsewhere decides to study journalism, then our industry, our great radio and TV industry, believe it's important that they are receiving the skills that they need to become fantastic journalists in newsrooms up and down the country.
So you're going round some of these courses and looking at what they offer and making sure they're of the required standard for the employers when they get
absolutely
out the other end of it.
It's a bit like Ofsted. We inspect the courses. That's the sort of proper day job, if you like. But much more importantly, it's a partnership. It is a partnership between those that are teaching journalism and those that are delivering journalism through the broadcast medium or indeed online. And I think one of the successful things about the BJTC for the past 40 years is it's always been the case that those people that run journalism courses, and there are some brilliant courses out there, have all really been working in the industry or still work in the industry now. So one of our requirements is that those people teaching those practical skills actually have done it themselves. They've sat in newsrooms, they've read radio bulletins, you know, they've put radio bulletins together, because that's a really important thing. So we require that. And where we're distinct from other journalism bodies, training bodies, is that we believe that students should learn through experiential activities, as in being journalists. So a great number of our courses from day one treat their students as trainee journalists, and we require them to do news days where they're out there not doing student news but doing news about real stories in their community, in their cities, in their towns. And they spend their whole course doing that and gradually developing the skills, so they're ready to walk into newsrooms and they're legally safe, which is absolutely crucial.
And being a cynical journalist, we're seeing newsroom numbers reducing, certainly in radio. I suppose, is there a danger that we're training too many journalists, or are these people going on to not only be journalists in radio and TV but doing other things as well with those skills?
Well, you know, we're seeing perhaps a retraction of journalism numbers within newsrooms that perhaps you and I would recognise. But there are, as you know, Stuart, so many other types of journalism out there. We accredit courses that are digital platform courses, so tablet journalism, online journalism, we accredit all those courses too. But we also see a lot of our students who are on some of the courses, especially some of the sports courses, we accredit sports courses, they're going out and working for the clubs. I'm not afraid to talk about marketing and PR. I think it's really important for someone going into that sector to know and understand what the skills of journalism are. So they're hugely transferable skills, even to the degree of we ask on our courses that students pitch documentaries or whatever they're doing. We think that's an important thing. Now, even if they don't remain within media, let's say, even just in programming, they've now got that skill of being able to pitch and or present an idea or a concept to whoever their employer will be going forward. That's why we ask for things like, we still insist now that all of our students, and we've got about 4,500 students at any one time, they have voice training. They're trained to use their voice properly and to project, not just for the microphone, but for larger rooms.
And how much academic focus is there? Presumably there still is some, because a lot of these courses are at traditional universities like Leeds and Sheffield and places like that. So presumably there still has to be some academic focus rather than just learning the practical skills to be a journalist.
Absolutely. Oh, you'll remember, I think you were a student at Leeds on the board.
Was,
journalism,
yes.
Course, yeah. There, and which is a course we actually accredit along with 54 other courses, and they are primarily within the higher education sector. They are degree courses, so yeah, the students absolutely love the practical learning. It's an important part of the vocational aspects of any course, but every course has an academic narrative through it. Has to. It's a degree course, and we would expect that and want that too, and a future employer would potentially want that.
From a radio perspective, there are groups like Bauer and Global, and you mentioned Global's obviously a part of the BJTC, but running, yes, their own schools and academies. So Bauer delivers courses in its radio stations. Global's obviously got its own high school, essentially, where it's doing GCSE and A-level and that kind of qualification. So how do those routes compare to undergraduate or a postgraduate qualification?
It's really hard to make a comparison. And they're all great courses. You know, we don't just accredit degree courses. We accredit courses that provide the skills and the learning that someone needs to become a journalist, either on the radio, on the telly, online, wherever they want to be. So we ensure that those skills are there. So at academic level, we don't state, we only do degree courses. So some of the courses that you're referring to, some of the employer-based courses are really good. You know, they're really good. We did accredit one a while back that was providing students from the Bauer Academy going forward into the company. And that was a really good course. And students really learnt their trade, their craft work in quite a high intense period of time. And so we're all for those courses and certainly look at them as courses that could be potentially accredited if they would want to come to us and go through our process.
And so you've got your spring conference coming up this week. This is people from the industry coming together with the course leaders and all kind of talking about issues around journalism. I know a lot of people who've gone from journalism into lecturing. So I guess there's a lot of crossover between the industries as well.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of crossover. In fact, I've got to the stage now, you're going back to, you know, my own career, and I'm now sort of walking into university and going, oh, it's you. Hello. Oh, you used to be with me at IRA. You know, so there's a lot of crossover. And that's great because... you know, it's brilliant that some people have decided to move from hard end shift work, if you like, in a newsroom and teaching the students. So, yeah, it helps us too, because as I said before, we are this conduit really between industry and academia. And if those people that are on the courses teaching the journalism have done it and been there and understand the processes, then that helps our process very much. And we know that the students are really being taught by brilliant professional people. I mean, I could name so many, I won't, because I don't want to pick one out over the other. I'll get into so much trouble. But, you know, you all know who you are. Up and down this country, there are brilliant radio journalists and presenters who are teaching on courses. And still, most importantly, I would say, I've never done the equation, but I would say at least 50% of people that are teaching radio on courses at the moment, it's probably higher, are still working in radio, which includes me, which includes, you know, lots of other course leaders. It's so important to stay, you know, in touch with what's happening, because the world has moved on. Journalism skills are the same in terms of those basic core skills. We're going to need them all the time. But the way we apply them and some of the platforms, everyone knows, has changed. 2 years ago, we had one of these conferences and we asked our industry colleagues alongside our academic colleagues in a big room, right, what are the new skills? And the industry colleagues said, we want people to make social shorts. Absolutely important. Caption social shorts, whether you're working in radio or telly or online, it's a basic thing. We want people to be able to tweet, which is great. I regard tweets as nibs, as we used to call them in print journalism. You know, it's a nib. So, you know, they wanted all these skills taught. That's fine. And then we said to the employers, or the academic colleagues said to the employers, okay, so we've only got a finite amount of time that we can teach these skills. Which are the skills now in journalism that you no longer need? That was it. There was silence because they still want those core skills. So it's quite hard to teach journalism nowadays. You know, when you and I were learning journalism, I'm guessing that we were sort of like, you were probably primarily radio, you know, it was kind of single platform. Now we ask our students, you know, oh, do a bit of radio, do a bit of telly, you know, be a master of many. And it's tough.
Yeah, I suppose, is there a danger that the material spread too thinly and people don't excel in one area at making great radio packages, for example, and they can do everything to a decent standard, but not excelling at something in particular?
Well, you could argue at that basic level of teaching those skills, do they need to excel in one area? That's one argument. I don't have a view either way. There are courses out there that are brilliant courses that look at just one area, that look at just radio. Admittedly, they're getting fewer and fewer. I think it's important for us to teach the basic skills. So the basic skills of storytelling, whether you're delivering that on radio or TV, it's all about telling a good story and communicating that and understanding your target audience. That applies across the board, whether they're viewing it on, you know, a tablet, or whether they're viewing it on the telly or listening to it from a speaker, from a smart speaker, as they say nowadays. But I'm unconvinced that, you know, we're spreading it too thinly. I think what we need to do as an organisation, which we've done in the past 4 or 5 years, we've become very robust in ensuring that the basics are absolutely driven home. So the ability to speak properly and broadcast properly with your voice, the ability to be factually correct, the ability to be legally safe, all of these key elements we've pushed home. And most recently, we've been talking about, you know, getting the students out there talking to real people, because that's an art that I'd never thought I'd say it, but that's an art that's kind of fallen by the wayside a bit. Students nowadays have been brought up around the environment of texting. So they even text their parents to ask them the question, what's for tea, you know? And when you say to a new green student, could you go out and do a Vox? That's scary. You know, it was scary for us when we started in journalism, wasn't it? But now these people are just not even used to talking to absolute strangers. So we're having to come up with suggestions and sharing best practice, which we were doing at the conference that we're having this week, about how we get those students to feel comfortable to talk to real people. Because you and I know that by talking to real people, you get real stories. You may get a press release from the farmer that says, I make great apples. So you use that as a press release, and the story will only ever be, I make great apples. But if you go down the road and talk to the farmer, he might say, I make great apples. Oh, someone came in, my pears are great, but I never realised. Then you do a story about his pears, you know, and you don't get that until you talk to the farmer, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, as you mentioned, that's something you're addressing at the conference. Something else that I spotted on your conference agenda as well is about this newfangled artificial intelligence. I can't even say it. So I'm worried that one day I'm going to be replaced by a news-reading robot. Is that actually going to happen? Because the technology is getting quite good now.
As you can't actually say it, clearly you do need a robot to say it for you. People are scared about this. I'm looking forward to learning more because I don't know enough. So don't look upon me as a world expert. We've got some brilliant experts coming in, some projects that have been happening at Sky News and over at the BBC and over at PA. Do you know what? It's not about being replaced. It's about gathering metadata and turning that into a format that can then be used by journalists to enhance a product. So, for example, the Sky News used a piece of software which used facial recognition to identify who was walking into the church for the royal wedding. And then up on the screen, it came up with the details of, you know, that's Lord Rothschild or whoever it was, you know, born in such and such. And that's all added content. So AI, yes, it's going to smooth out some of the more mundane operations that we do within newsrooms. It's also going to ensure that we can get more information to those people viewing or listening or reading our content as journalists. Is it going to replace you, Stuart? I don't know. I mean, do you want to be replaced? I think there's always going to be a need for personality. Think about this. We've been talking for the past 10 minutes. Would a robot really have delivered this and talked like this in this way. I'm unconvinced.
Possibly not. Possibly not. Maybe reading an auto cue or reading a script, but in terms of the interaction. I want to talk about local media in particular. Obviously, you know, there's a growing divide in some senses between national and local media outlets. Does the BJTC do anything, or can it do anything, to tackle issues in pay and reduction in staffing levels at local media outlets, whether that be, you know, TV newsrooms or radio newsrooms?
Well, we're not a union. I mean, the NUJ is a great partner and has been with the BJTC for 40 years and sits along those broadcast partners on our board. And they certainly would have a view. But we're not a union. I think what we have to always consider is the, you know, the quality of the journalism in the newsrooms that there are. But quite clearly, there are concerning things.
I guess the academics need to be realistic in terms of job prospects when graduates are leaving their courses, don't they?
Yes, they do. It's tough, because the most direct impact on us is that we require our students, every single student, to do a minimum of 4 weeks of work placement or work experience, if you want to call it that, at a recognised journalism employer. And, you know, a lot of them would choose radio because they love radio. Why wouldn't you? Radio is the best, isn't it? There is going to be a reduction in people running radio newsrooms, and more importantly, news editors that might, you know, have a relationship with local courses and bring people on. The second part of this equation for me, and the worrying part for me, and this is sort of a personal opinion, is that you go back to your days initially, all of our days as broadcast journalists when we first started. Yes, we learnt the basics on these courses that we're preparing people for working in a newsroom. But you learn so much more when you walk back into a newsroom for the first time. You listen to how people talk to other people. You know, you learn from each other or learn from more experienced people. And with fewer newsrooms around, there's a possibility that some students that get their first job as radio journalists will go into newsrooms that have, we may not even go into a newsroom. We'll maybe ask to, you know, base themselves at home, get loads of fantastic stories from their local community and send them back to a hub. And I'm not against hubbing at all. That's not where I'm coming from. But I worry about the nurturing of young talent or new talent coming through and how that's carefully managed, which may seem like, you know, oh, that's a small thing. But actually, it's a big thing, because it's really important when you first start on those first steps of your career to be supported both physically but also just on small things like, oh, don't call that counsellor today, call him next week, because whatever, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose actually newsrooms where there is a hub and you've got maybe 10 or 15 journalists, you get that support more than a small local radio station where there's only you or there's two people and you're working on shifts. So hubs can be a good thing in supporting newer people coming into the industry.
They can be a good thing, as long as the employer, whoever that is, and absolutely not reflecting on any particular employer, accepts that if this is your first job, don't say, you know, you work out of this town and work from home and just send us the stuff in. You know, those young journalists need to be in the hub. So, you know, they pick up these things. And then the more experienced team members are the ones out on the road all of the time, maybe only going into the hub once a week. I don't know how some groups are going to be organising this. You know, others would know more, but it just concerns me that we're giving quite inexperienced new journalists, you know, a lot of time where they're not necessarily going to have the support. But, you know, I'm not criticizing it. I've got a commercial head myself, but I'm concerned about some of the, knowing the people that come out of the course. Yes, they're ready to work and they're fit for our industry, but you know, there's so much more that you learn once you sit within a newsroom.
Yeah, a couple more things. I suppose 40 years of the BJTC and 46 years of commercial radio, we've still got these 2-3-4 minute bulletins at the top of every hour. Do you think they've got a future going forward, as somebody who's kind of been an editor in commercial radio? In another 5 years, is that going to still be there at the top of every hour, that 2 or 3 minute local news bulletin?
I reckon it is. You know, I'll tell you why. Because I still believe people want to know the world's not about to end. You know, and even if it's true, you know, I used to call it sort of like information passport at the top of the hour. You don't want to be in a situation somewhere else in life whatever age you are, where you feel that you're not informed. So if someone starts talking about something that's happened, it may not be a political story, although political stories are becoming quite hot at the moment for obvious reasons, but maybe something else, and you just haven't heard about that. Now, social media now plays a role in that. I accept that. The world has changed in that regard, but there's still a need for, I want that reassurance. I love music, you know, I love music radio, you know, but I still want that little reassurance that, oh, right, oh, that's, you know, the prince has had his baby. I need to know that. I know it now. I don't need to know every detail. I don't need to hear hours and hours of it. Breaking news forever. Well, perhaps I do. I'm a bit of a journalist, but, you know, the average Joe. So I absolutely believe that there's still a place for that. And I think that, you know, it would have changed by now if there wasn't. I think that also, clearly, the local news, or news that is suggested to be local, is the last bastion of localness or locality in some of the output. So as just sheer by default, you know, local news is going to stay for the time being.
And reassuring to see Ofcom kind of reaffirming that, because when the commercial stations are reducing their programming and their programming commitments, the trade-off is that they've got to provide an enhanced local news service. So I guess for now, at least from the government and Ofcom, the message is they want that to stay.
Well, that would be the case. I mean, who knows what will happen in the future? We've seen some interesting decisions in the past. I love radio and I'm passionate about local radio. And I see that there's now such a distinction between commercial radio and local radio. Local radio can still be commercial, but, you know, we've lost some of those elements for lots of reasons, and lots of good reasons and understanding. But if that's been allowed to happen, there has been a seismic change, and community radio now needs a bit of a fair crack at the whip. And I very strongly believe that if the goalposts or the playing field has been changed elsewhere in the ecological radio world, then community radio should also be allowed to have some of its restrictions around funding and around commercial activity to be lessened. Because originally those rules were created to protect people and their local revenue. Let's be very clear, these larger groups have created nationalized brands so they can do national sales. National sales is so important to them. So let's give, you know, community radio a chance to sell more advertising and a fair crack of the whip to at least survive. It was always a flawed business proposition, and that's unfair. The playing field has changed now, so the lower levels need to be changed as well.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of support for that view as well. And I suppose, finally, there's never been a better time, has there, to be a journalist? A lot of journalists I speak to, and I come across a lot, say, you know, oh, what a great time to be working in radio or in telly, covering politics and some of the big issues in the world today. You know, we're not just reporting the news anymore. We're reporting a changing world.
Absolutely. I mean, story-wise, it's a brilliant time. I've never seen anything like it in my career. I think everyone agrees with that. But also, wow, it's so exciting to be a journalist, and how you can get stories now. Data journalism, which is part of many of our courses, it's a skill to learn how you do that and apply that with some of the software out there now. But actually, the real skill is how you turn that into a story that remains compelling. And you still need that as a journalist. So that's where it's... But goodness, if I, you know, my, when I first started in journalism on a great newspaper, we were given, you know, 20 quid to go around all the local pubs every Monday and do what we called the pub run, where we talked to all the landlords and locals and get loads of stories. We always had to, it was a requirement of the newspaper that everything had to be off diary. We didn't do press releases. Now, the sheer volume of stuff that's out there and what you can do on social media to find stories. Do you know what? I'd love to go back, just only for a week, be a cub reporter, and the stories you can turn out now just are out there. I think it's a really exciting time. Yeah, the world's changing. We're going to be asked to be on lots of different platforms. We may not have newsrooms that we recognize in the future. A robot may be doing this, a robot may be doing that. But if you've got an inquisitive mind and you're prepared to talk to real people and you can tell the story and deliver it to a target audience, then there's always, always an opportunity out there to be a great journalist.
Really good to chat to you, John, and good luck with your event this week. If anybody wants to find out more about the BJTC, they can do that on your website. It's bjtc.org.uk, isn't it?
Certainly is.
Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it, John.
Thank you, Stuart.
David Lloyd and James Cridlin still to come. First, a quick word about Clean Feed. If you're doing an OB or an interview with somebody or co-hosting from a remote location and you want great quality audio, Clean Feed is the solution you might have been looking for. It's designed for radio people and podcasters. It's really easy to use, simple to connect in live quality audio over the web, and it even lets you record if you're making a podcast right within the browser. It won't cost you anything to get started, and it'll only take a minute or so to get signed up and doing your first live interview or OB. Find out more at cleanfeed.net.
I'm James Cridlin, the radio futurologist. Given the amount of change to the media landscape, why does radio still do so well? Well, I think a lot of it is due to this.
What could be more refreshing than Newport menthol cigarettes?
No, not cigarettes. Habit. We've always listened to radio. It's a habit to wake up to the clock radio, or to turn the radio on in the kitchen. It's habit and automatic that the radio goes on in the car on the way to work. Radio cottoned onto this in the 60s and 70s when it stopped carrying individual shows like comedy, quizzes, farming programs and special hours for housewives. Radio changed to be a consistent offer and a consistent listen. You'd always hear the same type of music and the same type of programming whenever you tuned in, which was good for habit. The same people doing the same time slots week after week, month after month. And that's why attempts to unseat radio have been difficult, because you're trying to break a habit. And like coffee drinking, a decent beer, or cigarette smoking, habits are hard to dislodge. Last week came news that the New York Times' podcast, The Daily, is now doing 2 million downloads a day. Now, sure, it's a far cry from NPR's Morning Edition, which has 14.9 million people listening each week. But it is something to consider that The Daily is succeeding in breaking people's habits. There's a certain amount of the US population that, instead of the radio, now habitually listens to Michael Barbaro's weird intonation every day. Their habits are being changed by highly produced daily podcasts that are long enough for their commute. Habit 2 may be explaining why radio has a problem in many countries with younger audiences, because they may still listen in roughly the numbers they did before, but they listen for far less time. And if you've heard people saying that audiences grow into radio listening as they get older, I'm here to tell you that that's not true. All of the statistics I've seen show that younger audiences don't magically change their habits later in life. And as they grow up, they continue listening to less radio than their parents. Well, habit has been radio's friend for the last 50 years. It's enabled it to successfully win the battle against the Walkman, MTV, and other new technologies. But habit could be radio's enemy in the years to come, as habit-forming content appears elsewhere. Through addictively great programming and innovative distribution, it's up to us to keep the radio habit alive. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. And now on the Radio Today programme, it's my weekly habit, it's David Lloyd. Radio
Moments! Now, when was the last time you felt so annoyed you really wanted to leave your radio station? This week in 1976, the straw that broke the camel's back for Johnny Walker, then at Radio 1.
After doing the lunchtime show for 7 years, Derek Chinnery said, "Contract's up in June, Johnny. We'd like to offer you another 2 years of lunchtime show, but no more album tracks." I said, "What you mean is you want me to play more Bay City Rollers?" Who I famously called musical garbage one day. He said, "Yeah, if they're in the charts, yes, more Bay City Rollers." So I said, "I'm not really going to be excited by that, Derek. Why not just for a while take me off Monday to Friday? Give me a show at the weekend. I could just play, have more musical freedom." So he said, "That's ridiculous. I'm not doing that. It's 5 days a week. It's the lunchtime show, 2 years or nothing." So I had one of my ultimatum moments again. I said, "Well, it better be nothing then, Derek."
Rather sad moments as well. When we say goodbye to Johnny Walker, really, don't we? We say hello, but at the same time, the last of the shows, isn't it, Johnny?
That's correct, Tony, yeah.
Well, I'm sure I wish you the very, very best of luck in your future career.
Thank you very much.
In the States, I believe?
Yes, I'll send you a postcard from San Francisco.
And I assure you, you have a lot of people listening in this morning, or this afternoon.
Yeah, this afternoon.
Yes. Yeah. Nobody's going out to lunch today.
Hope not. I shall begin, shall I?
Seriously, though, Johnny, the very best of luck.
Okay, Tony, thanks very much indeed.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Johnny Walker on Radio 1.
Johnny Walker waving a tough goodbye to Radio 1. And this week, 33 years ago, music was again one of the catalysts for Mike Smith ending his stint on Radio 1 Breakfast.
I felt that when I was doing the Radio 1 Breakfast show, there was a chance that Stock, Aitken and Waterman were ruining the whole thing. And it was one of the things that chipped away at me to say, look, you only said you were going to do this for 2 years, so when it gets to 2 years, leave.
I think you could be the only breakfast DJ on Radio 1 who went, right, that'll do me. Thanks very much, ta-ra.
Well, it probably wasn't the right decision, because I'm now not front of camera or front of microphone, and missing it all.
Just going up to 9:30, the daytime team are lining themselves up at the moment. Carol Decker of Tapau will be answering What's It To You with Simon Bates this morning. Take it to
Mike Smith, ending his days on Radio 1 Breakfast this week in 86. He died 5 years ago. XS Manchester got a new breakfast show a couple of weeks ago, thanks to Adam Brown.
Morning, hello, how's it going?
And that station launched 11 years ago this week. It was licensed to GMG as Rock Talk 106.1, a speech and rock music service for 35 to 64-year-olds with a strong commitment to local news, current affairs and interactive debate for the Manchester area.
106.1 Rock Radio. A station with news, sport and information. A station with personality. A station with fantastic chances to win. And above all, a station that rocks all day, every day.
XS beginning as Rock Radio this week in 2008. 2 years ago this week, some beautiful overnight radio from Radio 4. Will Young joined Brett Westwood and the gang of bird lovers with a live all-nighter, In Search of the Dawn Chorus.
Quite pleasant here, isn't it? But there's definitely a sense of isolation, of being way out in the middle of a landscape which...
Bitten again.
Bitten. Oh, I don't know whether anybody caught that, but that was a bitten booming as well.
Silence is amazing. I mean, it really is, you know, having come from a metropolis, it's wonderful. It's the perfect place to hear things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you've got to concentrate sometimes. What we're going to get, I think, at this particular time, is sporadic bird sounds. It won't always be, a full-throated cacophony or anything like that. We're going to get birds gradually drip-feeding their way into the...
Dawn Chorus, live on Radio 4 this week in 2017. The first commercial stations in the 70s were broadcast on both AM and the newfangled FM. And as FM grew, they were pressured to split the services, so generating their own first competition. Southern Sound and Ocean Sound created South Coast Radio. Metro Radio and Tees hived off Great North Radio.
Video killed the radio star. That's kind of true, really. I mean, when we're on radio, you can build any kind of picture you want about us. And when you see us, you say, oh, I didn't think you looked like that. Anyway, yesterday we got a winner on The Secret Sound here on Great North Radio, gave away a stereo system, mini hi-fi system.
No visualisation back then, and giving away hi-fi too. Hereward launched its AM station, WGMS.
The world's greatest music station, a Paul Graham Saturday show till 12. Still to come, of course, with some more music from Elvis Presley, but right now...
Beacon got WABC.
The greatest hits of all time.
The R&B and Mercia got Extra.
And it's great to be up here in Warwickshire in the West Midlands on Extra AM to share it all with you as well. The brand new sound at 11:52 and 13:59. Extra AM, number one for fun. And a little bit later on, I'm going to start off a brand new competition. We'll be bearing David Hamilton.
Chilton got Super Gold.
Our Chocolates and Emma here at Super Gold Drive. Thursday afternoon, 3:26, and Tony's famous history book is open once again.
And Trent and Lesser Sound got Gem.
I just want to be your teddy bear. Gem AM it is with me, John Peters. I've got to make a habit of stop opening these radio stations. I tell you, that's how it's going now, right now. Hold on.
The AM-FM splitting followed some trials, and in London, those trials began this week in 1986. But it wasn't a gold service spin-off originally, it was FM where the experimentation happened.
1 minute from now, Capital Radio will split.
For the first time ever, different programmes will be broadcast simultaneously on Capital's AM and FM frequencies.
If your radio is tuned to Capital on 1548 AM, after the 10 o'clock news, you'll hear Sax on Sunday with John Sax.
If your radio's tuned to Capital on 95.8 FM, you'll hear Capital's new Sunday station, CFM, in super stereo.
Almost all radios can pick up Capital on both AM and on FM.
Capital's trial AM-FM split this week 33 years ago, and presumably that went so well they decided to do something completely different when the time came and Capital Gold was created. So with Margaret Howard's last edition of Pick of the Week 18 years ago...
Hello again. I've often started Pick of the Week with those words.
The death of Radio City's Phil Easton 6 years ago...
Phil Easton.
James Whale leaving TalkSport 11 years ago...
Well, no, I didn't say anything. I'm not allowed to say who to vote for in the London mayoral elections. It's wrong.
At the start of GCAP 14 years ago, emerged GWR and Capital, accumulating 35% of all commercial radio listening, compared with Global's 45% now. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thanks this week to regulars David, James and Roy, plus my guests John Goodell and Nick Pitts. Next week, we're at Tuning In and the Radio Festival 2019 as part of Radio Audio Week. If you're going, come say hello. If not, tune in next week to hear from some of the speakers and delegates.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macasso.